So, folks at home, we're going to get Larry Sinclair on the air here very shortly. In fact, I'd like to welcome a guest who everyone doubted at first, and the media attempted to annihilate and disclude in an unjust attempt just to protect Obama. We here at Long Live America believe in hearing everyone out before rendering final decisions. As time has passed, it looks like this man has a strong factual basis in his claims and deserves to speak. And when the Wayne Madsen report broke, the biggest story of the year about Obama and Rahm Emanuel both being members of Man's Country in Chicago last year, which is an extremely popular gay club in Boys Town, Chicago, no one in the mainstream media had the courage to touch the story even whatsoever. So talk show host Jeff Rentz, I think he put it very well when he said that Madsen has vindicated Larry Sinclair. So we want to give him a fair chance where the media, the mainstream media, well, they didn't. So please welcome Mr. Larry Sinclair to the show. Larry, do we have you on the air?
Yes.
Larry, no, thank you so much for joining us. You're on there with Robert, Larry. Jason, and Tyler tonight. Folks at home, I'm going to ask, since we do have some explicit material here, please have your little ones go away because we wish to have a very candid discussion. Obviously, we don't swear, you know, our format, but by the same token, I wouldn't want to be blamed for any little ones here or anything. So, Larry, we're just going to ask you a few questions at first.
Okay.
All righty, Larry. Hi, this is Jason. What media intimidation have you actually experienced? Have there been certain tactics or the media kind of thrown you under the bus? So I was wondering how they've actually tried to intimidate you from keeping your mouth shut.
Well, my family has been constantly threatened. I mean, this is ongoing now for more than 3 years.
Oh, wow.
There's an organized network of internet bloggers that came out during the 2008 campaign that, I mean, just literally started, attacking anything and everything about my family. They took out and started attacking my father, who had been deceased since 1996.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I'm sorry.
They have continued making phone calls to families and in-laws of my nieces and nephews. And to this day, they continue to do this.
That's horrible.
No, I can't honestly believe that. You know, Larry, I mean, I just saw you, a guy just came out. People tried to accuse you of megalomania or somehow profiting from this, which obviously there was no immense profit for you to have. But, in fact, you took a lie detector test. It was given to you by a pornographer named Dan Parisi, and he offered you $100,000 if you took it, and so you did. It was seemingly rigged to fail right from the get-go. So now he's trying to sue you, of course, for being mentioned in your book. We want to know what's going on with that, and we want to know, do you think he was an Obama operative? Have you ever even been given a nonpartisan lie detector test?
No, I haven't. And let's go. I'm glad you mentioned that. Let's clear something up here. This gentleman made an offer, and he put it on his website, which was whitehouse.com, which for years operated as an internet porn site. He made this outrageous offer about 8 hours after he had read that I had posted on a Windows Live Space page that I had contacted a former FBI polygraph expert, Parisi's the pornography expert, by the name of Jack Tramarco to arrange a polygraph. And then all of a sudden this guy comes out of the blue. I've never heard of him. People were telling me and sending me emails that, you know, this isn't a guy to be trusted. I confronted him about the pornography claims. He swore up and down that they weren't true, only to find out that they were later. Even Parisi's, he took Edward Gelb, who claims to be a PhD and is not. He chose Ed Gelb.
Okay.
He also hired a second polygraph examiner by the name of Gordon Barlin in Salt Lake City, Utah, that was supposed to do what they call a quality control and a blind study of the results.
I see.
Gelb was not supposed to disclose his findings prior to Barlin getting all of the data and, you know, doing his blind study. Well, it turns out they published Gelb's so-called report 2 days before Barlin was even sent the data. And then when Barlin's report came out, he clearly stated that the degree of the data was so messed up that he had to actually request that they resend it to him.
Wow.
And then he said that it still wasn't up to par, and he had to actually try to enhance it himself. Barlin also clearly pointed out that Gelb, being the so-called professional that he was, clearly knows the standard for giving a polygraph, and the blood pressure cup and that little finger thing that's on your finger, under normal processes, are always supposed to be on separate arms. You're not supposed to have the two of them on the same one. Gelb did that, and he kept cutting off the blood circulation with the blood pressure cup. The fact that the polygraph was set up, I had been told that it was possible. I got a phone call, early morning of February 25th of 2008, just before 1 a.m., telling me that they knew for a fact that the polygraph was fraudulent, that it had been prearranged, and that it had been paid for through contact with the Obama campaign and Dan Parisi. Now Parisi's trying to sue me, saying that I've ruined his reputation.
Yeah, he had one before.
And this is hilarious, and I'm glad you guys laughed. Parisi has filed a $30 million defamation suit. He files it in the District of Columbia because he thinks that the courts there will be a little more to his advantage. You know, he sues Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Jeff Renz, and myself. And he says that he's been defamed because I put out in the book exactly what transpired. And he says that he's not now, nor has he ever been, a pornographer. But yet he doesn't, you know, argue with the fact that since 2004, you know, the San Francisco Chronicle, the Los Angeles Times, the New York Times, CNET, all of these agencies, media outlets, including NBC and ABC, had reported numerous times that he was a pornographer, referred to him specifically as a pornographer. He never had a problem with it when it was, you know, putting money in his pocket. He's brought this suit as of June 1st, the judge in the U.S. District Court in Washington has dismissed all claims against Amazon, Books A Million, and Barnes & Noble with prejudice. And, of course, his attorney's trying to get the judge to change his mind, which that won't happen.
Okay. No, I appreciate you clearing that up.
Larry, this is Tyler with the show. And You have a book out called Cocaine, Sex, Lies, and Murder, which I personally encourage the audience to read out there who's listening. And I want you to give us the complete, unabridged, and unadulterated details of your relationship with Barack Obama between November 3rd and November 8th of 1999 and in Chicago.
Okay, what had happened was I was in Chicago for the graduation of my godson from the Great Lakes training facility, Navy training facility, from basic training. I had hired a limo service, a five-star limousine. When I had got to Chicago, I had intended on going out and taking Lee and his fellow graduates out and partying around the town. Lee graduated on Friday the 5th of November of 1999. We managed to get him off the base that night. I had planned to take him out again Saturday, although that was subject to whether or not he received his orders or not as to whether he could leave the base. I had told the driver on the 5th that I would still go out on Saturday. And if Lee couldn't go, if he knew anybody that, you know, knew Chicago that wanted to go out and socialize and show me around. Mm-hmm. So Lee could not go out on Saturday the 6th. The limo driver picked me up. He said he had a friend. We drove into Chicago. I was staying out on the outskirts of Chicago in Gurnee, Illinois. Pull up on the street in front of this club. He gets out, opens the door on the driver's side.
Uh-huh.
A gentleman's standing there, and he introduces the guy straight out as Barack Obama. You know, and he puts his hand out, shakes his hand. We go into the club and start talking. We spend a little bit of time drinking. I had made the comment that I could use a line. And, of course, he turned around and said, asked me if I was referring to Coke, and I said yes. He said that he could help. He made a phone call. We leave. We're driving around for about 30, 45 minutes. We stop. I give him $250. He gets out, comes back, hands me an 8-ball of Coke.
Wow.
I take off a CD tray that I had a CD in the back of the limo that I had brought with me from Colorado. Rest it on his knee. Start to prepare to do a line of Coke. In the process, you know, I'm straight up. I've been gay all my life. You know, you kind of feel your way around. There was something about him that told me that, you know, this was something that I wasn't going to end up having to fight back on. So as I'm doing a line, I start to actually touch him up around his, you know, his crotch area, which apparently was not a problem to him. It moves forward. He actually undoes his pants. I don't want to get too graphic on the air.
Sure. Okay.
Okay. But it led to oral sex. But in the process, he reaches into his right pocket and pulls out a glass cylinder pipe and crack cocaine and literally starts to smoke a crack cocaine rock right there in the car in
Whoa.
The process.
Wow.
You know, this goes on for about an hour and a half, 2 hours. The details in the book are very specific. They have been. Like I said, I'm getting a little leery on how graphic to get on radio anymore.
Sure.
No, please, you know, you can be explicitly honest with us. Obviously, we can't swear, but aside from that, as long as it's factually accurate, go with it.
Okay. I mean, I performed oral sex on him, and like I said, this was something that he did not resist. In fact, he, you know, was more than willing to engage in it. He was the one that actually unbuckled his pants and actually, you know, pulled them down below his knees in the process. In the meantime, I'm still snorting coke. He's smoking rock. We're drinking. I mean, it was no big deal. It was something that in 1999 I tend to do a lot of. We ended up calling it a night. The driver suggested that he take me back to the hotel and then drop Barack off. He said that that would work better for him. I didn't have a problem with that. You know, I get back to the hotel, you know, say goodnight, tell him, you know, it's been fun. The next day, Sunday, I get a knock on my hotel room door. And it's Barack Obama standing there. And I invite him in. He brings more Coke, which I had told him that I still had some from the night before. But he makes it clear that he came back because he wanted oral sex again, which I performed on him in the hotel room in Gurnee, Illinois. Again, more drug use on both parts. He left. The following morning, I flew out of Chicago back to Colorado Springs. Now, I didn't think nothing of it the whole time. I just happened to be sitting in Tijuana, Nayarit, Mexico, when the 2004 Democratic Convention was going on. And I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at this guy on TV in Mexico, and I'm going, wait a minute. Who in the hell is this idiot? Because I gave this guy 2 blowjobs. I swear to you. I mean, I'm sitting there and I am just totally freaked out because the guy had said that he was in public service. From what I was involved in 1999, the fewer questions you asked and the less you knew, the better off you were. You know, and so I'm looking at this and I'm going, okay. It's not news to me. I mean, plenty of politicians have done it before.
Yeah, okay.
So I think nothing of it. Everybody says, well, why didn't you come out when you saw him at the 2004 convention? What business is it of mine if, you know, that he's representing Chicago? I don't care, you know?
Yeah.
So in 2007, after he announced he was running, I just happened to see a news report, and I swear to this day, I still think it was on MSNBC, where people were asking what it was about Barack Obama that got them so excited. And I believe him and Hillary both had scheduled speaking arrangements or engagements around Temple in Pennsylvania or Penn State. I'm not sure which school, but there was something going on in the Philadelphia area with the two of them. And I'm listening to this one girl on the news report saying that she thought that he was just, you know, open and honest, and she admired him for being honest about, you know, his drug use and everything. And I'm like, wait a minute. He's not being honest, because everything I've read, the guy swore up and down that he, at first, he didn't do anything other than weed. Then he comes out and says, okay, you know, he did blow when he could afford it. Then it came out that he hadn't done anything since high school. Then, of course, that changed to where he was saying that, well, no, every now and then in college. So what I did was I contacted the Obama campaign in September of 2007, and I had specifically asked them if he would be willing to come out and correct his statements as far as the extent of his drug use. I never once mentioned anything about the sexual encounter whatsoever when I called the campaign. A few days later, I get a phone call from someone claiming to be a Mr. Young, stating that they worked for the Obama campaign. And one of the questions that he asked me, he says he wanted to know why I had not asked Obama to come clean about the sexual encounter. The minute he asked that question, I knew flat out that this person did not work for the Obama campaign, because I had never once mentioned anything to the campaign about the sexual encounter at all.
Wow, who was the guy?
It turned out to be Donald Young, a gentleman that was the choir director at Obama's church in Chicago.
Wow.
Who was murdered on the morning of December 23rd, 2000.
You know what, Larry, we're going to get to that in a second.
Yeah, let's see here. So to be clear, you did cocaine. Obama did crack cocaine. Mm-hmm. And he twice performed a fellatio on then-Senator Obama in the limo at the hotel.
Right, and actually he wasn't then Senator Obama, he was Representative Obama.
Oh, gotcha.
In the Illinois House, yes.
Yeah. I see.
Yeah, Larry, do you have any idea as to the rest of the extent of Obama's bisexual gay history with other men, aside from the Trinity United Church murder scandal, which we'll get to in a second? Has he always been bisexual as far as you know? I mean, do you have any ideas of that?
Let me tell you something. In my experience, and you know, I heard some of what you guys were saying when you first started your program tonight. There is something about an individual who is gay that they really can, if they pay attention, they can really size up an individual whether they know anything about them or not. You know, Obama was easy to size up on that night in 99. There was no doubt in my mind that he would go that way. The question is to how, to what extent. I got, as far as I'm concerned, Obama has been at least bisexual for a great deal of his life. You cannot tell me that this man at 38 years old engaged in, you know, sex, in homosexual activity with another individual that they had just met, and that that would be his first time.
No, I agree. That sounds only logical. In fact, it seems from both you and the Wayne Madsen report, which is the whopping bombshell last year, my goodness, that Obama enjoys being filleted by older white men. Every single story addressing the subject seems to confirm likewise. So the it seems to me it's kind of symbolic of having the quote-unquote white man service him on a Freudian level, almost like getting back at his mother or something. I mean, why do you think he only enjoys being filleted by white men and like he never does it back, from what I've read? Why do you think that is?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do, look, I'm not sure to what extent Frank Marshall Davis, you know, was involved with him physically. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that a young Obama in Honolulu with that type of influence was, you know, somebody's plaything. Now, if it turned out to be that Frank Marshall Davis actually molested him or, you know, enticed him or whatever you want to call it, you know, he's the type of egomaniac that he would never admit it in a million years because he's scared to death that it would destroy his image. I think something that his high school coach, basketball coach, said back in early 2008 about him, that he never considered himself to be black, until he got caught doing something that he wasn't supposed to do. And any time he was confronted for something that he knew he wasn't supposed to do, he immediately accused whoever was confronting him of being racist.
Wow, of course.
That he was being confronted because he was black. Okay.
Yeah, we've grown quite accustomed to that, seeing the race card pulled by liberals everywhere. In fact, it's all, yeah, what, race card, gender card, class warfare card, so.
Well, you know, and mentioning Wayne Mattson, and I'm glad you guys did, I think your listeners need to know something about Wayne. Wayne Mattson did not believe me in 2008. Wayne Mattson was at the press conference in June of 2008 at the National Press Club, and immediately afterwards wrote two articles, you know, basically saying that he was of the opinion that, you know, I was a Karl Rove type plant. I mean, Wayne truly has come a complete turnaround from what he thought in 2008 when people were attacking, as opposed to what he believes now. And I give the man credit for being honest enough to publicly state that he was wrong in 2008.
Wow, okay.
Well, the audience may not know, but you touched on it earlier about Donald Young, but apparently there were three gay men at the Trinity United Church, and to bring significance to that, that was the church that Obama formerly attended in Chicago. You know, they're all murdered within 40 days of each other in late 2007 during the Democratic primaries, and no one questioned it.
These okay, names... can I correct something?
Sure,
for
yes,
you?
Please.
It was actually, there were two gentlemen that had ties to the church. Donald Young, which was the choir director, and according to Jeremiah Wright, his quote-unquote play son.
Wow.
And then there was a gentleman by the name of Larry Bland that had frequented the church off and on. Some people have continued to include a Nate Spencer in that, and Nate Spencer was not murdered. And
well, that's Larry, I was curious about that because they supposedly died of some sort of HIV-related condition, but from what I've read other places, that was just a cover-up on Nate Spencer. So you honestly believe that he died of natural causes?
Well, I mean, I have Nate Spencer's death certificate.
Okay.
And according to the hospital, he died from pneumonia complications to AIDS.
No, I understand that. I was saying that honestly thought it was a cover-up, which is why it's mentioned on most articles I ever see. So as Tyler mentioned, so Donald Young and Larry Bland are of more significance here than according to you. So,
right.
So Larry, please tell us within the highest amount of scrutiny, if you haven't already mentioned it in other shows, what was said in those conversations there? Because we know you got a hold of Donald Young before he was murdered. And
well, the communications between Donald Young and I slowly started to develop to where he came out and informed me of exactly who he was. You know, Donald Young made it very clear that his contacting me was at the specific request of Barack Obama and Jeremiah Wright. That has never, ever changed. People have accused me of, you know, harassing the Young family when I wrote the book. What they don't seem to want to acknowledge is that the Young family actually cooperated with me on a great deal of stuff concerning Donald Young's relationship with Obama. Between September and about mid-December of 2007, there were phone calls and text messages that continued that always originated with Donald to me. At one time, we were discussing the fact that he told me that Obama was discussing it with his pastor as far as how to come out and word, you know, a correction to the extent of his drug use. Then shortly thereafter, Donald Young said, hey, you know what, they're just playing games with you. He's not going to admit to it. And these things kept going back and forth. Young actually acknowledged the fact that he had an intimate and sexual relationship with Barack Obama for some time. You know, and I reported this. Of course, everybody wanted to attack. I filed an affidavit with the Chicago Police Department as far as the communications between myself and Donald Young. I made it very clear to people, because everyone says, well, when you came out with your video, how come you never mentioned Young? it wasn't until early March, you know, early to mid-March, that I even realized that Donald Young, the murdered Donald Young, was in fact the Young that was talking to me and sending me text messages as far as what Barack Obama would or would not do as far as correcting his lies about the extent of his drug use. I wasn't following Chicago. It wasn't clear to me that he was the individual until, like I said, early to mid-March. And when it became clear to me that this was the same individual, I notified Chicago authorities.
Okay. Well, yeah. Larry, Donald Young's mother said that her son and Obama were very close and that Donald was killed for something he knew about Obama. The Globe reported in May of 2008 that a private investigator said the same thing. Do you agree with that?
I will tell people what I always say, because people turn around and ask me, well, if he had something to do with Young, why are you still alive? Donald Young and I are different in one sense. Donald Young didn't have the past that I had. Donald Young was well respected in the Chicago community. Donald Young was an elementary math teacher. He was an accomplished musician. He was, you know, basically a pillar of Chicago society, okay? Donald Young coming out and corroborating anything that I had to say, or even coming out and saying, hey, yeah, Barack and I had an intimate relationship. The Obama campaign could not do what they did to me. They could not come out and do these internet attack smears, which is exactly what they did to me. They couldn't control Donald Young in that way. There is no doubt in my mind and in my heart that Donald Young was murdered on December 23rd of 2007 because he could have sank the Obama campaign for once and for all.
No.
And I will say something else.
Sure.
I honestly believe that his murder was made to look similar to that of Larry Bland's because people in the community had already started screaming that they had a serial killer on the loose that were targeting gay black men on the south side of Chicago.
Wow. It's so many questions we have to ask you, Larry.
This is fascinating.
Yeah. Fascinating.
Thank you so much.
Amazing.
Another one here about the Trinity United. They called it the Down Low Club or the DLC, just so it confused as an acronym for Democratic Leadership Council on wiretaps. Now, is this my question to you is, or two-part question is, was this church notorious for its homosexual annex? And if so, was Jeremiah Wright considered the gay matchmaker there?
Okay, as far as what the church was famous for, I have no idea. I do know that Jeremiah Wright has a history of reaching out to homosexual men and bringing them into the church. I do know that Jeremiah Wright specifically referred to Donald Young after his death as being his quote-unquote play son.
Wow.
And to me, you know, I'm not sure what a play son is, but I don't know too many men that, you know, play son with grown men somewhere.
Oh, obviously a strong sexual undertone there. You know, Larry, what do you know of Obama and Rahm Emanuel's involvement with Man's Country from the Wayne Madsen Report? We can't stress enough to our listeners, please check out the Wayne Madsen Report from 2010. It's located at 5015 North Clark Avenue in North Halsted, Chicago. It's a big gay hangout, one of the oldest bathhouses there. Do you know anything about their involvement with Man's Country?
Well, what this brings up is something. I don't know if you guys followed the Resco situation back in 2008, but there's an individual by the name of Stuart Levine that was involved with Tony Resco, and it's also in federal custody. And during the Tony Resco trial, Stuart Levine was to give testimony about cocaine and gay sex parties that he had arranged in which Barack Obama and Tony Resco frequented. And this was at the Purple Hotel, which was part of basically in the area of Man's Country. But the federal judge prohibited Resco's attorneys from soliciting any of that testimony. In fact, they ordered Stuart Levine not to even attempt to testify to any of that information. Rahm Emanuel, I got a call from Wayne Mattson back in March, I want to say March of 2010, and he said he wanted to speak with me, and I was honest with him from the get. I said, look, I've read what you wrote about me after the press conference. I said, I'm not sure what I can do for you, and that's when he had informed me that he was going to Chicago, that he had spoken with some people who had pretty much corroborated what I had been saying in 2008. The only thing I can tell you is I believe I've seen what Wayne has dug up. I know some of the people that have given Wayne information, and I think Wayne Mattson is right on point.
Now, Wayne Mattson actually does a terrific job on a lot of issues. Obviously, people will try to dismiss him as a kook and conspiracy guy. We don't have to agree on everything, but as far as factual accuracy, the guy, he does a pretty outstanding job. I've followed some of his work. Larry, I'm going to name for you some other names. So we've covered Donald Young, of course. Other people have possibly had affairs with Obama. Reggie Love, who is the White House presidential special assistant. Arthur Davis, I don't know if I'm saying his name correctly, but it's a U.S. representative from Alabama. Bill Frist and Deval Patrick, governor of Massachusetts, and Bill Frist is the former GOP Senate Majority Leader. Do you know anything of Barack Obama's relationships with any of them?
I do not have any firsthand knowledge about any of them. Reggie Love was actually first exposed by me.
Oh, wow.
And the reason it was is because Reggie Love replaced a gentleman by the name of Nick Colvin, who was Obama's personal go-boy while he was actually in the Senate and part of his presidential campaign. Reggie Love came in, I think, right around the first part of 2008. I had brought up the fact that Reggie Love had some college pictures where he had been teabagged by some of his frat buddies.
And I've been throwing that term around for years now.
Well, you know, I'm like this. You know, I grew up in the South. Like I said, I've been gay all my life. But there's one thing I know. If a man has teabagged another man, whether they're passed out drunk or not, and took pictures of it, and you didn't want to be or you didn't appreciate or that was something that you were not into, believe me, whoever took those pictures would be walking around, you know, with deformed arms, you know, maybe a brace on their neck, maybe pushing a wheelchair, but none of this happened. I raised the issue, actually, with the actor from the Fox series House, Cal Penn, when Cal Penn went to work in the White House, because Cal Penn is actually an admitted bisexual, and I still to this day believe that his involvement, in fact, he has since returned to the administration after walking out last year and being mugged in DuPont Circle for his BlackBerry. But Reggie Love, there's no doubt in my mind that there are, you know, some things going on there that Michelle Obama probably wouldn't want the mainstream media to report on.
Okay.
I'm sure you're right.
The reason I asked that, because in the Wayne Mattson report, which, like we said, everybody needs to read, Obama member of Chicago Gay Man's Club, I believe that might be the title of it. But from last year, 2010, phenomenal. But it also shows, you know, that Rahm Emanuel was a member of Man's Country. Is in fact, he's bisexual as well. Obama and Rahm Emanuel had pickup games. That's how the basketball, they'd meet people. It's too long to read here, but still, everybody needs to read this, because either this is totally contrived by Wayne, but I do not believe it is. In fact, from his past work, Wayne has a tremendous knack of finding out information. So, Larry, I have a question just about the homosexual media, because obviously our media, you know, homosexuals play a very prominent part in it, which people can feel differently about. But why did they throw you under the bus so quickly? How come none of them ever came to defend you?
Because, first of all, I'm not the average. I guess I'm not your everyday A&P Walmart or Dillard's variety fag, so to speak. And I can say that word.
Yeah.
Okay. I've always been very open, but I've also been very boisterous that I don't believe that homosexuals are entitled to any special protections. I don't believe that marriage should be allowed between the same sexes. I never have. And I guess probably I've never really fit in the gay culture that's so popular. I believe that you can be who you are without trying to force everyone around you to agree with you or accept what you do. I find it real interesting that the gay and lesbian community talks about people being intolerant, and yet they chose to ignore the people's vote in California on Proposition 8.
I couldn't agree with you more. Thank you for saying that.
To the point to where they went to businesses, and specifically one Mexican restaurant in Los Angeles, where the woman just happened to donate, you know, $100 because she was a member of the Mormon Church and she believed, you know, in Proposition 8. So she donated $100 and they found out about it, and they turn around and have thousands of faggots standing in the street blocking entry to her business, to the point to where her business was literally shut down, and then extorted $10,000 out of her to fight Proposition 8. You know, you can't say that people are intolerant. You can't demand tolerance if you yourself are intolerant.
No, I completely agree. And like you said, the ballot initiative and our voting in this state has been highly dismissed. So these homosexual special interest groups say, we don't care what the people vote. You're going to do it anyways. And that's what's happening in our state as of now. In fact, our politics here, Larry, are grotesque. You know, it's strange. The National Enquirer is the only paper to break the Rial Hunter / John Edwards, you know, cover up in, what was it, 2008. And the only paper I actually saw break your story initially. But, Larry, I want you to be able to have a real unbiased lie detector test. I'm going to see maybe what we could possibly do about that, because you've never had a truly fair opportunity. I mean, you sound credible here speaking to you here now. I see nothing. Obviously, we've never met, and I can't, you know, with a smoking gun conclude anything. But I sincerely appreciate you coming on our show. I want to thank you for just being such a terrific guest and for your forthright and candid nature, unlike the closet case in chief. How can our listeners contact you? What's the best way to buy your book, Cocaine, Sex, Lies, and Murder?
Let me tell you something, and that's what I want. I want people to read the book. Don't read what you find on the Internet, because people have taken bits and pieces and twisted it, you know, to fit their agenda. You can go to LarrySinclair.org, which is the easiest way to buy either a paperback or a limited edition hardcover directly from me. It's shipped priority mail.
That's great.
If you own the Amazon Kindle e-reader, it's available on Amazon.com in their Kindle books. Because of the defamation suit by Dan Parisi, my distributor, Ingram Books, has taken the book out of distribution pending the outcome of the lawsuit. People who want to contact me directly, there's an email at larry@larrysinclair.org. It's the easiest way. I will tell you, read the book and then tell me that I have not put it out all on the line there. And like I said, Wayne Mattson, I respect the guy beyond belief. He's one of the few people who, you know, made a complete turnaround from what he once thought of me, and he has defended me ever since then. There's no doubt. I mean, Jerome Corsi sent me an email back in April, you know, telling me to continue to fight, that he truly believes that I will be vindicated.
No,
I believe that too.
We interviewed him a few weeks back, and he's so highly credible. We all know he's exceptionally factually accurate, and yeah, he displayed his whole case in its entirety on our show. We're very proud to have him and 100% support him as well. Larry, I want to thank you so much for joining us on our show. Would you say we've been fair in our interview?
Oh, I would. You know, I truly believe you have. Most people have been. You know, all I can do is answer your questions and tell you what happened. I can't force anyone. It's like you said, you know, it's a matter of doing your research and getting to know exactly what took place and making up your own decisions.
Yeah, it's so nice to have you also. You were actually the one holding back. It wasn't us having to hold back from questions. You were kind enough to actually hold back yourself just out of respect for our listeners, but we're willing to go out there. So I really appreciate you being so upfront and forward. And how dare the media dismiss what you have to say, or even just try to throw you under the bus, because it seems like you're extremely credible.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. No, Larry, thanks so much for coming on there. So, guys, I'm sitting here just completely mortified because Larry, he sounds so credible on radio. I'm just trying to picture in my mind as to why, like I said, people could call him a plant, megalomaniac. I don't see those out of him. He seems very genuine, sincere, candid, forthright, honest, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah, he seems on point. He was dead on with certain names. Like, he knew exact names, exact times. It's not like he was just thinking it up in his head. He knew what he knows what he's talking about.
Especially when Wayne Madsen broke this at 5015 on North Clark Street in Chicago in Boys Town, the man's country, with Rahm Emanuel and Barack Obama. I mean, you could look into the membership cards there. There's various very detailed, you know, this from sources, information, which I'm not going to read here because you go to their website for Man's Country if you really want to be grossed out. Or talks to, you know, I hear all kinds of sadomasochistic and voyeurism and exhibitionism and all kinds of things there. You know, come play and, you know, whatever, in leather and chains. I mean, people's sexual stuff is their prerogative, but it seems pretty obvious. And like Wayne reports, that everybody there knows it. Like, we reported and outed Jerry Brown, which from politicalwind.org, before the internet got scrubbed clean. By the way, everybody knows it there in Chicago, just like everybody about Jerry Brown. Every lobbyist knows it, and politician in Sacramento. It's just one of these media cover-ups again. Not everything is a conspiracy. They try to throw that word on it because it carries with it such a high stigma, you know, and is derogatory in nature. So, guys, what are you thinking right now?
I think it was pretty fascinating. I mean, again, guys, his book is Cocaine, Sex, Lies, and Murder, basically all about his stories, his sexual rendezvous, whatever you want to call it, with drugs and everything, with now President Barack Obama.
Yeah, we respect Larry for coming on there. We're not going to make a value judgment on that. So I want to thank Larry Sinclair
for
coming on our show.
Thank you. That was one of those very rare times where I actually trust somebody, you know, that's come here on the air, being an avid listener of this show. And before we delve a little bit further, when it comes to eye care, you cannot afford to go with anything less than the best, as the use of your eyes